Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey guys, Lisa Stanley here, your Renta Yenta, and today I am so excited about our guests. I say guests plural. We've got actress, producer, and singer. Emily Kincaid is her name. She recently put on her producer hat and was one of the producers of the Netflix documentary Abducted in Plain Sight. Not just produced it, but she did play a part in the documentary. Wait until you hear this story. If you have not seen this, you run to Netflix to watch this. And then we will actually be talking to the young girl, who's not so young anymore, named Jan, who was abducted in plain sight. Welcome, Emily, to What Goes On Around Here. And boy, what goes on around here today is something fierce. Listen, I mentioned you're an actress, you're a producer, you're a singer. I think you're also doing some publicity for your own project.
Yes.
So let's get into stuff about you before we get into stuff about the documentary so people could kind of understand who you are, who Emily Kincaid is.
Okay.
So you were born in Alabama.
Yes.
Raised in Atlanta, Georgia.
Raised in Atlanta. Yeah, I moved when I was two, so I don't really remember Alabama very much.
But siblings?
Yes, I have one older sister. She's 14 years older than me. She still lives in Atlanta, has married two amazing boys. My parents are both in Roswell, which is right outside of Atlanta.
Oh, the UFO place.
No, that's
oh, not
different,
that Roswell.
Right? Different. But
I was
going to
say, it really
that.
Goes hand in hand here.
It really would.
All right, so tell us a little bit about growing up. I know you were a member of the Greater Atlanta Girls Choir.
Yes.
You got to perform at Carnegie Hall and the Royal Opera House of London.
Yes.
Is that when you caught the acting bug?
I think I caught the acting bug out of the womb.
Oh.
My mom and dad said I came out of her singing. You know,
really?
And I've been, you know, acting and singing since I was really little. I started taking professional voice lessons at age six and just kept going from there. I was always doing different productions. The first play I was in was Peter Pan, and my school told me I could not audition for Peter Pan, only Tinkerbell. And I...
That was it.
Oh, that was a fit. My parents got involved, and I got to audition for Peter Pan, and I got Peter Pan.
Wow. Well, didn't they know Peter Pan was played by a woman?
Right.
Sandy Duncan was Peter Pan.
Duh. So, yeah, I've been doing that forever. I was really fortunate. Growing up, I went to school at this very hippie school called High Meadows on a farm. And my classes were in like old railroad cars and our theater.
Did you have the milking cow class?
We did not. And it wasn't actually as Southern as you think. It was definitely more like a hippie vibe to the school. But all the teachers were amazing and very open, and they kind of let us do, you know, anything we wanted to do. So I really got to explore my singing and my writing and my acting, which was amazing.
Wow, that's so great. So what was your first paid acting gig?
Oh, God, that's a good question. I'm trying to think. Probably I did some, you know, small work on like One Life to Live when I was living in New York. And
when One Life to Live was still on the air.
Right, exactly. And then when I moved here, I got to work twice with the director, John Hillcoat, who made Lawless and Triple Nine. And I did two music videos with him. I did one for the band Massive Attack and one for Bob Dylan. The Massive Attack one, I got to work with Cate Blanchett all day, which was an absolute dream come true because she is my idol.
Wow.
You know, so that was amazing.
Wow. Okay, so then when did producing come into play?
Yeah, it's really this project.
Really? Was this your first project?
This is my first producing project.
Wow.
Which is,
score!
Yeah, it's really unreal. I had just moved to LA, and I had a childhood friend, Stephanie Toby, who's the other producer on it, and she was working for the talent manager, Stacey Abrams, who knew Jan. And she had Jan and her mother, Marianne, wrote a book titled Stolen Innocence. And that book Stephanie found, Stacey Abrams gave that to her. And then Stephanie hooked me up also with a job with Stacey Abrams.
But you guys worked together, you and Stephanie, right? Didn't you meet at like a Manhattan Beach restaurant
or
something?
We knew each other from Georgia. So we grew up together. Her sister and I sang together and performed together in that same choir. Yep. And then, I started working for Stacey as well. We found the book. Stephanie really wanted to make something about it and contacted Jan. That's how we found our incredible director, Skye Borgman.
By the way, I should mention, it's an all-female cast, if you will. The writer, the director, the producers, you were all women, yes?
Yes, but our editor is a man, James
Crude. Oh, how dare you.
Well, he might as well be a woman. I mean, he's fantastic, and I love him to death, and we couldn't have made this film without him. But, we are a strong, team of women, which I love.
Okay, so I'm going to let you tell the story because you told the story and it turned out great. It's on Netflix. It's called Abducted in Plain Sight. The only thing I'm going to say is it's a story about a young girl in the 70s named Jan Broberg, who we are going to speak with later on in this podcast, who was abducted not once, but twice by the same man. So I think she was 12 when it began.
Yes.
Okay. So please tell the people.
Yeah. So Robert Birchtold moved into their community in Pocatello, Idaho. And, he was married and had five kids. And he met the family when Jan was only 10. So he spent, about 2 years grooming the family, manipulating the family. He became best friends with the dad.
And capitalizing on their weaknesses.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They went to the same church, very heavy into the church community. So I think that drove a lot of their decisions throughout.
What is their religion? Are they Catholic? Are they Episcopalian? What are
LDS.
They? LDS.
So he groomed the family for a couple of years, and then he said that he was going to go take Jan horseback riding, and he drugged her and kidnapped her and ended up marrying her in Mexico, and then came back.
Wait a second. How is that legal, a 12-year-old getting married? Was that the legal age in Mexico?
Well, I think it was, but you had to have the parents' consent. So at one point, he actually did call the parents and say, I want consent to marry Jan. And they said, absolutely not. It was annulled and everything like that. But, he was able to go through with it. And, during that time, he was, he had told Jan that they had been abducted by, aliens, basically, and that, in order to save the planet,
They
had to complete a mission, which meant that they had to have sex with each other.
That was part of the mission.
Right.
To have a child together.
Yes. And if not, one of her sisters would go blind, her father would be killed, and
As you're telling this story, I'm looking at Anthony and Crystal, who's in the room here, and you guys are looking at this expression that you have on your face is like of non-belief, of disbelief.
Yeah.
This is a true story. She's not telling you like a made up story.
And
right?
It does sound made up.
Right?
I mean, it really does.
I'm just thinking, guys are so damn creepy, just insane.
And Crystal,
I watched it last night.
Yeah.
And my reaction was, oh my God, I cannot believe this is all so real. But
yeah.
When I came in this morning to talk to Lisa, I said, you know what? I used to give my parents so much hell for being so protective over me, and they literally trusted no one. They had to know someone for like over 20 years for me to even think about going to hang out with them by myself when I was young, like before 15.
For sure.
And now I get it. Now I get why they were so freaked out, because they saw all this happen.
But even in this particular case, the parents were involved, as we're going to get into with Emily in a minute. So that, I know, upset you tremendously. I tried to go through the TV to shake the crap out of them.
I felt sick to my stomach.
It was really hard to watch, Emily. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, so, no, I understand.
Yeah, it was really hard to watch. So basically, he takes her. They go to Mexico. They get married. But then he gets caught, correct?
Yes. So then he does get caught. He comes back. And
he goes to jail, though, for a minute.
For a hot little minute.
Mexican jail?
Yes.
Which is debatable if it's actually a good.
Right. Like, but, you know, he had told Jan, he knew that they were getting caught and were going to go back, you know, to her family. So he told Jan, you know, you cannot speak of any of this to anyone, definitely not your parents. You cannot talk about the mission, which meant you can't talk about all the sex that I've been forcing upon you. And if you do talk about it, then, like I said before, your father will die, your sister will go blind, and a bunch of other terrible things will happen. So Jan, being 12 years old, was absolutely terrified. And you have to remember, this was in the early 70s, where people were obsessed with UFOs and aliens, and is it real? Did I really see a UFO? So to her, this was real.
Of course, and she's 12. You know?
She's 12.
And he's an adult who's friendly with the family. Now, had the relationship with B, as he's called, start with the father and the mother after the first abduction, or was it prior to the first abduction?
It was after.
That's what I thought.
It was after. I will say he took, you know, it's hard when people watch the documentary. I think people get very, and I understand this, they get really upset because they're like, how did all this happen? It seems really fast, you know, the ideal world, we would have had more finances. We would have been able to do a huge, you know, mini series to be able to go into depth about a lot of the other things that we just didn't have time for.
The bottom line is, the parents also got into a relationship with him of a sexual nature.
Yes.
So he was sleeping with the mother. I don't think he was sleeping with the father, but there was a sexual relationship.
Yes.
And the daughter.
Yes.
Yeah. What bothers
me the most, though, is that the I guess what is hard for me to wrap my head around is the part of the mom being with him after he already kind of took her, and you know that's sketchy now, and she still does it anyway. That's the,
yes.
Like, if it was before that would be, it's hard for me to.
Well, it's hard for anyone normal to wrap their head around this, but the mother trusted him. And the mother didn't know what was going on with Jan, which you see in the documentary. The mother didn't really know any of that. And either did the father at that particular time.
Even though she didn't say it, though, she still was taken, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah. And I understand that. That's hard to wrap your head around.
And by the way, for those of you, when you do watch this, this all happened organically with Emily and the parents, because originally the parents weren't going to talk about anything of this stuff, but the raw emotion overcame them and they just spit it out.
Yeah, that is true. You know, we knew about the mother's affairs going into the interviews, and the father's we found out from FBI documents.
Right. Let's talk about that. So here's the beauty of how this got to be made, and how come we're able to see and hear so much, is because they got together with the original FBI agent, Pete Walsh, who was the original guy in the 70s. And that guy kept 1,500 pages of documents, court scripts, audio tapes, reel-to-reel recordings, which you used in the documentary, which changed the whole entire shape of it, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we had a lot of material that we didn't know we were going to have. I mean, all of the recorded phone calls, you know, those are all real. You know, I think a lot of people watch it and they're like, you know, Sky did an incredible job. She's our director. She did an incredible job doing the recreations. We shot them on 8mm, so they kind of felt like old home movies. So they really fit seamlessly into the documentary. But then we also used a lot of real home movies, and we had a lot of tape recordings of the parents on the phone with B, you know, at various times.
Was it the first time they had heard it? The recordings themselves?
That I'm not sure about. I don't know if they would have heard them if they were in the FBI's possession. That I don't know. But
they did hear them as you were making the documentary. Yeah,
they definitely heard them. And they've seen the documentary, you know, numerous times. So
I'm sure they have. Okay, so now they've got all of this stuff. They make this documentary. And like Emily was saying, she was abducted. She was brought home. He was jailed in Mexico for a nanosecond. He gets out. He comes back. And he does it again. Tell us.
Yes. And, you know, he waited 2 years to do it again. And, you know, let me say, even after she was kidnapped, within these 2 years, they still let Jan go on a private vacation with him.
That's when their affairs started with him.
Right, exactly. So, you know, and that was not in the original book. Both of the parents' affairs were left out. So, you know, it was really shocking for us. And I think, you know, for Bob, his admittance was, you know, probably really the first time he had ever really said this out loud.
The father's name was Bob.
Yes.
The same as Robert.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, yes. That's creepy because the abductor's name is he's dead, thank God, Robert Birchtold, and the father's name is Bob.
Yep, Bob Broberg.
The bees confused me.
The bees,
so many
too.
Bees.
Yeah. Well, you know, the reason he's called B is, you know, Birchtold signed all of his love letters to Jan, you know, forever B, which was our title before this. So we've actually had three titles. We started out as Stolen Innocence, which was the book. And then we loved that he signed his letters like that. Not loved, but, you know, it was pretty perfect for the movie. We did that. And then when Netflix, you know, took it on, they thought it needed to be a little bit more, you know, to the point. Because Forever B and seeing these two people on the cover, it's like, are they a father and daughter? You know, who are they? But our tagline was always Abducted in Plain Sight, and that kind of was a better selling
such
title.
A good title. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it is a great
title.
It
draws such attention. Okay, so she gets abducted again, and this time, though, she's now brainwashed. She now thinks she's in love with him.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So she goes willingly.
Yes.
Tell us.
He took her, or she went willingly, really, and he enrolled her into a Catholic girls' school in California. So nobody knew where
Under a fake name.
Yep, under a fake name. And he had told them that he was, you know, undercover, part of the, you know, CIA, and that if anyone came to look for Jan at this school, they were a bad person, and to tell him right away. So he manipulated even this Catholic girls' school. You know, they thought he was big time and that his daughter needed to be protected. And the family had no idea that he had taken her this time.
And where did he get his money? Because that kind of a school costs money.
Yeah, who knows? That's a good question.
I mean,
as his brother said in the doc, he sold cars out the yin yang. So I think that, you know, he had a way of manipulating everyone. I mean, I have no idea where his money came from, but
He must have had some of it to put her in a private Catholic
school. And keep her there for months. So,
Yeah,
for sure. So,
So she's in the school, but that's where she gets caught. Is at the school.
Yes.
So tell
yes.
everybody.
Yeah. So Pete Walsh, the FBI agent, he eventually, you know, he was kind of looking at different schools in the area, found this school. They had found a connection to it. So he figured that she was there, went, they said she's not there. And then he's thought of checking under an alias. And of course, she was under, you know, a different name. So then she got brought back.
She returned and was on his side.
Yes.
And tried to make sure nothing happened to him.
Yes, yes. I mean, at this point, she was very much in love with him and, you know, was very angry at her parents because she wanted to be with him. She wanted to get married. And remember, she also thought that this mission still had to be completed. So she still thought she needed to have a child with him, you know, by the age of 16, or her father would be killed and all these other terrible things would happen. So she knew she had to do this. She had to follow through with it.
Was this in your studies, did you find that this was the first girl that he did this with, or were there others?
There were others. And six, I believe, have come forward, and we don't know really the details. I know that some of them were held for long periods of time. We don't know really the details on the other women. And when we started making this doc, we reached out to, you know, members of B's family, and they did not want to be involved. Understandably, they had separated from him. They did not want to dredge up the past. And the same thing went with the victims.
You did try to talk to his five children, I imagine, right?
Yeah, we reached out to the whole family.
I wonder if those children were molested by their father.
I don't know. And that's a question that some people have brought up and asked. And I have no way of knowing that. Yeah.
Well, obviously, because he's dead. You didn't get to talk to him for this.
And I'm really glad I didn't, because I don't know how I would have handled being in a room with that man.
You would have killed him, and then he would have been dead.
I probably would have. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how did it affect you in producing this? Because this is a horrifying story, and you had to deal with it on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
How did it affect you?
Yeah, it was hard, I think, for all of us. You know, it's a really difficult subject matter. And let me say, I'm a huge true crime fan. You know, I watch everything, but watching people really talk and being in their moment, seeing them cry, shake, feel their emotions, that was something completely different. And it stuck with all of us. You know, it has. You know, I think about our editor, James Cood, who had to edit over and over again and rewatch all of this daily, and I can't imagine what it was like for him to do that, you know,
especially if he has kids.
Yeah, he does not.
Oh,
but
that's a
you
good
know
thing.
Yeah,
because that would have been really hard to have to watch over and over
it
again
would.
As a parent.
I do have one question, actually.
Yeah,
do you have any, not necessarily personal, but anybody in your family or anybody that you know personally other than Jan Broberg that was sexually assaulted, and how would that have affected you?
Yes. And unfortunately, I know a lot. So that's another reason why this documentary was so important to me to take on. You know, I have friends and family members that have been sexually abused. I think it is entirely far too common, you know, that this happens. Yeah. And, you know, most of my friends that have, some have admitted this stuff to me since the documentary came out, I think that it's made people feel a little bit comfortable coming to me and saying, like, that resonated with me and this is why. But they also told me that they've never told anyone else. Or maybe they told their mother, and this is in one case, and was told not to say anything. And this also had to do with religion.
This is so awful that religion plays a part in stopping people from telling stories like this.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think there's, you know,
did
multiple
they continue
factors.
By the way, did Jan and her mom and her sisters and father continue going to that church after this?
Yes, and they are still, you know, very devout members of the LDS.
This sounds like
LDS
a cult
faith.
More than a church. I'm just saying.
I understand that, you know, I'm not a religious person. I didn't grow up religiously, so I think I too see the cultish, you know, look to a lot of religious organizations, especially the LDS faith. But
for those of you who don't know what that is, will you explain to them what the LDS? Do you know what that is?
I mean, it's the Church of Latter-day Saints.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which is Jesus Christ, and I don't think he would approve of this behavior.
Yeah, probably not.
Just saying. I mean, the whole thing just floored me, and the timing of this is so unbelievable, because now HBO has a documentary called, is it Never Leaving Neverland or Neverland?
Leaving Neverland.
Leaving Neverland.
The Michael Jackson
The Michael Jackson documentary about his alleged pedophilia. And I know that Jan had made a comment about it recently to the press. So when we get her on the phone, I'm going to ask her about that as well. But it just seems like your documentary might not just have been helpful for Jan and you and anyone else who, because I'm sure Jan will tell us that it was therapeutic making the documentary. But I think it's also bringing a lot of this issue to the forefront. And maybe they saw, people saw your documentary and are now thinking, time to come forward.
Absolutely. And that's what we really hope will happen from this. And we also hope that people will take a closer look to who is in their life. You know, that best friend of the family that you may never think could do anything wrong, but is maybe displaying some unusual behaviors with your children. Maybe this documentary will spark that in your mind and you'll start to rethink your relationships.
I can say this. If somebody says, I'm having sleepless nights and I need to sleep with your 12-year-old daughter to get over it. Run!
As fast as you can.
As fast as you can. I will say this about Abducted in Plain Sight. It's already won 11 awards, including mm-hmm. Best Documentary Feature Film. And before Netflix was on board, it made the film festival rounds. So congratulations.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. And I do want to just note that the festivals, we are so incredibly grateful for. I would tell every independent filmmaker that you should do them because they are what gave us our audience. And they are what gave us our fans and some of our best friends to this day. And, you know, it was Tallgrass Film Festival in Wichita, Kansas, which we never thought this would happen, where we got our agents at CAA.
Unbelievable, huh?
Yeah.
So you just never know.
You never know.
Well, look, let's get Jan on the phone because I'm dying to talk to her.
Absolutely.
And see what Jan has to say.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, Jan. Thank you so, so much for coming on my podcast and taking your little bit of time you have to talk about this extraordinary ordeal that you went through and probably still go through on certain days. Yes?
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let me do a formal introduction. We're on the phone with Jan Broberg. She is the subject of Abducted in Plain Sight, a Netflix documentary about your abductions, not once, I say it with an S, abductions, but twice. So this is phenomenal. A, thank God you're alive and everything is okay.
Yeah.
What I'd like to just start, if you don't mind, Jan, is to ask you, prior to meeting this man, Robert Berchtold, or as you guys called him, B, how was your memories of your childhood and of how you were as a young child prior to?
No, I had a really ideal childhood. I grew up in a small community where there were lots of neighborhood friends, and Dad owned a flower shop. Mom was a stay-at-home mom, and we ate dinner together every night around the dinner table. My parents were really good listeners, good communicators, and we experienced just unconditional love. So honestly, my first 12 years of life were pretty idyllic.
And you had a good relationship with your sister prior to this as well, yes?
Oh, both of my sisters, and we're still very close to this day. Yeah, we're all very close.
Okay, so let's fast forward to now this guy, B, comes into the neighborhood, moves next door to you guys, goes to church with you guys, becomes very friendly with the family. How does he work his way into your bedroom?
Well, you kind of hit the nail on the head. He moved in, he was married, had five children of his own who happened to be the same ages as the three of us girls, so we all had a best friend. And over time, we would do family activities together, we would go He had a boat, so we'd all go boating. He had snowmobiles, we'd do that. He had a trampoline. They have everything that we didn't have. And they were just what looked like just a very affable, fun, friendly, wonderful family. And so that's where the grooming begins, is that the amount of time that you spend with people and how much trust is built is equal to the unbelievable part of this couldn't have happened, this couldn't be him, he would never hurt our daughter. You have to imagine that you have your, you know, best friends or your brother and sister-in-law that you would sign paperwork, like if we die, they'll take our kids and raise our kids. That's how close we were as two families that, as you said, lived in the same neighborhood. We went to the movies together. We spent, you know, family nights together, cooked together. He picked us up for school and took all the kids to school in the morning. He'd open the back door and say, "It's going to be a great day." And that's how we started our day.
Was there any part of you that ever felt like, this just isn't right?
No.
Okay.
Not in the beginning. I mean, after I was, you know, kidnapped and brainwashed, I mean, I felt that he also had been, you know, kidnapped, basically abducted, that he had to do this mission. I mean, it's a really intense, an interesting, intricate story of brainwashing, mind control, manipulation.
The grooming
that happened in the 2.5 years was prior to all of that. Nothing ever happened.
Let me say this. He told you a story, because for those of you who have not seen, you better run to your Netflix to see this. It's unbelievable. He told you a story about you being an alien and about you having to complete this mission of bringing a child with him into this world. I know now you don't believe any of that, but is there any part of you that still thinks, maybe there was some truth to that?
No, I know there's no truth to that. But what is interesting is that it wasn't coming from him. It was coming from him, let me reiterate, but through a little tape recorder, a little intercom box that he played in my ear. When I woke up in the back of that moving motorhome, strapped to the bed, there was a box playing in my ear in a high-pitched monotone voice, and that voice was what sounded like an alien voice telling me the things that you just described. And prior to that, part of the grooming was, the early 70s were filled with science fiction movies, and he'd take all the kids to the science fiction movies. There were always reports in the newspaper of UFOs, and he'd bring those over and throw them on the kitchen table. And wasn't talking to me necessarily. I was in the room, but he was talking to my parents. "There's been another UFO sighting. Do you think there's life on other planets? There must be, but this is so weird. Do you think this is real?" They would have those conversations around us, but not directly to me. So all of those little seeds were planted before I ended up in the back of a moving motorhome. And when I first saw him in the motorhome, it was a couple of days into the motorhome driving through the desert, and now I know we were headed to Mexico, he was lying on the sofa, covered in blood, as if he too had been taken, as if he too was like, "Where are we? What's happening? Oh, my word, I'm bleeding. What's happened?" And I told him the story.
Wow.
I told him about the mission, because the little box had been playing in my ear for 2 days. And it's pretty intense when you are sequestered, when your information is controlled and you've had all of the setup so perfectly laid out that a person will, especially a child, will fill in the blanks. They'll believe pretty much anything if you control their food, their sleep, when they can, you know, move around.
You're not kidding.
Their information.
Oh, you poor thing. You poor thing. You must have spent years in therapy. I mean, you sound so normal.
Well, I did have some really good counselors along the way. And one of the things I did at age 30, I went to a program called the Landmark Forum. And so that was really a big...
Let me ask you, I know about the Landmark Forum because when I was, I guess, in my 20s or 30s, I did some of that. I think it was called at the time Life Spring or EST. That's kind of a brainwashing thing, Jan.
Well, it could be. Yeah, the thing that I experienced was really about being able to look at the things that had happened in your past and put them in the past, and then be able to just move forward with your life and create it newly on your own. it didn't show up as a brainwashing thing at all to me.
I mean,
it was a really powerful experience.
How was your relationship with your mom? I think your dad just passed. I'm so sorry to hear
he
that.
Did.
After all of this has been over now quite some time, your relationship with your parents, even now knowing that your parents were also involved in a relationship with B, you guys were able to repair that?
Yeah, we really were. And again, I think based on the perfect childhood we had for those 12 years, and as I came into my 20s and, you know, went through some of the grieving process of losing my young teenage years and not being a normal girl that had, you know, crushes on boys and those sorts of things. And I really did go through some times where I could call or I was in college writing a life history paper, and I was so angry with mom and then so angry with dad and then cried about why didn't you know more? How was this possible? And I had the kind of parents who just listened, acknowledged all of their mistakes, all of the things that they didn't see, and just said, oh, we're so sorry, our Jani, we would never, you know, if we had known, of course, you know, this never would have happened and we just didn't know. And then as I got older in my 20s, I realized that as I studied more about brainwashing and manipulation and sociopathic behavior, I realized, well, my parents were completely groomed as well during those 2.5 years prior to the kidnapping.
For sure.
And especially my mother, you know, the manipulator knows what to target, what weakness or what's wrong in their marriage. Oh, they don't have a great sex life. Let's target that, figure out how to get that, you know, so I can get them over a barrel. So I think that if you, you know, had more time to explore or maybe read the book at some point, you can see how that grooming happens. And if we were that much smarter today in 2019, we may not have 800,000 reported sexual abuse cases of children in our country, but we do.
Mm.
So there are lots of people who are still not seeing what is there to see because it's so subtle. I don't like to call it a red flag because that would be easy to see. They're little blue sound waves that go through your gut. It's just for a brief second, like, ooh, something's off. But then you ignore them because the person that you had that gut reaction to is your best friend or is your brother or is your father or is your priest or your minister or your bishop. And that's why we don't want to see it, first of all. So there's still a huge epidemic in this one area. And although my story is really fantastic and has all kinds of twists and turns and it's pretty crazy, on a really microscopic level, thousands upon thousands of people will relate to this story because it happened to them by somebody that they knew, that they loved, that they trusted, or that their parents did, or it was a parent, and no one brought them to justice, out of the darkness into the light.
I mean,
that's the message.
So said, so well said, well said. I have just a couple more questions for you. One is, how are you doing today now that you really have to relive all of this? First of all, you had to relive it doing the documentary. How was that? And second of all, now you have to go out there and do press for it. How is any of this coming back up, regurgitating?
You know, because I've spent 25 years telling my story to everybody from a small book club to police departments to education people that maybe would benefit from hearing this, that they might see a small sign that they wouldn't have seen otherwise, it's like I have been able to therapeutically heal from the trauma.
Yeah.
I still, of course, do have emotions, and sometimes they overcome me and I cry or I just get exhausted, and it is true that you do relive it to some degree, but I really have the ability to see what happened and to have it be sitting over there, learn from it, help others from it, and not let it affect my present life or my future. And that's something that I am really grateful for. And because I had such a supportive family and such a loving family, you know, I really was able to heal, and I was able to.
It's really
to tell
unbelievable.
The story.
It's unbelievable. Do you ever dream about him?
I have before. Yeah, unfortunately, I have. I've woke up before in a cold sweat and thought, oh, good, he's not here.
Did you ever speak to him after the second abduction and after he was put away? Did you ever speak to him again?
Well, two times while I was in college, he found whatever apartment I was living in and where I was because he called me. And the one time it was because he said on the phone, and then of course I hung up on him and then shook and cried and found my sisters and said, oh my gosh, how could he know where I am? And he said, I'm getting married and I need your permission to marry this woman.
What?
I need you to sign some papers. Yeah. I mean, talk about absolutely, completely sick.
Well, the good news is he's dead. The good news is he's dead.
Yeah. True. So yes, in that way. And then when I faced him in court, when he showed up at the conference I was giving in a van with a gun, and I had no idea that that could ever happen. It was just impossible. And it did. And then I filed a stalking injunction, which he contested. So I had to go to court.
Can you believe this? Sitting unbelievable.
Just feet away from me.
Now, yeah. last question. I am assuming you're dedicated your life to this now. And tell us what you're doing now.
So, yeah, I have speaking engagements that I am actually on my way to one right now. And that's kind of the next step. I also am hopeful that there will be more episodes perhaps that come through a docuseries or some other kind of television series, because the thing that I really feel people still don't understand is the grooming, because they're having a hard time putting themselves in my parents' shoes. And I'm like, that's because you don't understand what grooming feels and looks like, and it's happening to you probably, because you'll find out 10 years from now that there was a child that you knew, and the person that perpetrated on them you also knew. You just don't know it, because if you're being manipulated or groomed, you're unaware of that.
I saw that you made a comment about this Michael Jackson Neverland documentary, mm-hmm. on HBO, and you felt a kindred to those children.
Yes, I did, and I really love to use that example now that it's out. I remember telling my mom years ago, I said, you know, I love Michael Jackson. I love his music, but Mom, he's a pedophile. And people don't see it. They don't see it. He's such a bright star that they can't see through the stardom and see the reality, because all the signs are there, all of it. It's public knowledge that he has young boys and they sleep in his bed and that they go to his Neverland. And I'm like, and nobody wants to see it. That's why they don't see it. And that's the same thing on a microscopic level in a family. You don't want to see that it's someone in your family. And when the child even might attempt to tell you in some way, you're like, well, nothing happened. Well, we just won't let you stay it.
Because it reflects on them that they're a bad parent. Yes, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
I understand.
Yeah, it's the final frontier. People have to talk about this, and they have to come out from the dark shadows and corners. And even if it happened to them, you know, 50 years ago, to say it out loud and to bring the perpetrators out of those dark corners as well is freedom, and it's hard.
I bet it is.
And it's hard.
Well, Jan, two things, yeah. I want to say. Thank you so, so much for bringing this story to life. I want to thank Emily for making this documentary along with an all-female producing writing team. Really brave. You are a brave, awesome. Brave woman. And I have to say, when I watched this documentary, I was jumping off my couch. Couldn't believe what I was witnessing, what I was hearing, and the fact that you actually went through it all and are here to talk about it and are bravely speaking out on your behalf and others. I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you, Lisa. It was an honor to be on your podcast, and I hope that it starts many millions of conversations that otherwise would not have happened. That's where it all begins.
Ditto. And thanks, Jan. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, Emily, that was phenomenal.
Yeah.
She sounds so normal.
Yeah, she really does. She's really maintained a healthy mental state through all of this somehow.
And I didn't ask her, but I do know she does have a son.
Yes.
And I should have asked her, but I didn't want to delve into her family too much. He must know, of course, everything that went on with his mother.
Yes.
How old of a child is he? Teenage?
No. He's an adult. Yeah. And yes, she's, you know, maintained a really open and healthy relationship with him and all of her nieces and nephews as well. Just letting them know that if anything feels strange, that they can always come to her and to keep an open dialogue about everything.
Well, I am so grateful that you got a hold of this project and that you guys made this project. What's next for you?
The publicity doesn't stop. So right now I'm helping Jan handle all of her many incoming press requests and, you know, TV appearance requests. I'm taking on a couple other small producing jobs and acting jobs as well. And I don't know. We'll see. I mean, people are asking for a part two or a three-part series of this doc. So who knows what's next?
All right. Give out your social media so everybody can find you and where they can find Abducted in Plain Sight.
Okay. So everything for Abducted in Plain Sight is under @abducteddoc. And my social media is @KingdomKincaid.
This has been unbelievable. I mean, honestly, the most interesting stuff. I mean, I'm obsessed with true crime. What can I tell you? If I didn't do what I did in real life now, I would be a profiler for sure.
I can see it. I can see it.
Okay, thanks, Emily.
Okay, bye, Lisa.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.